Okay, our next talk will be held by Christoph Eckert. Christoph is here from Karlsruhe and has joined the conference also last year and two years ago. And he's going to talk about usability issues, which is also a very important topic. Thank you very much, Christoph, for proposing this.
Thanks for the introduction. Linux Audio usability issues. You may wonder, are there any? I think so. Why this talk? When looking back, as I started to use Linux Audio applications, I think looking back, it took too long until I was able to control the system instead of the system controlling me. So I collected some ideas when I worked on my box and I had some problems. I noted them in a text file. And so I started to look for usability papers. There's a Mac OS 8 Human Interface Guidelines. It's a huge paper, a lot of pages in it. I wondered where good papers are the GNOME User Interface Guidelines. Very good ideas, very compact. So if you're interested, it's really worth the read. Then there's User Interface Design by Joel Spolsky. You can read it in the web. It's also available as a printed book. Unfortunately, he dislikes Linux, but the ideas he has are really good. And last but not least, there are the GNU coding standards. It is important to understand that usability is not limited to graphical user interfaces. It's also valid for command line interfaces. Based on these papers, I have collected 9 ideas or 9 principles I'd like to introduce, and after the introduction, I'll have some examples. First of all, knowing the audience, the destination user group, who are the people for whom I write the software? It's a difference if I write software to teach children learning notes or make a musician able to do some hard disk recording with a computer. And the user usually tries to derive the usage of the computer from the real world he knows. When the user knows a studio and how to record with analog equipment, he will try to put his knowledge on the computer when using a software. On the other hand, you have a software model. The software works in a certain way. And the better the software model fits the user model, the easier the user can use the software. Or the user has certain expectations as soon as he sits in front of the computer. How can one do so? We can have use cases, we can have service, we can have feedback agents. And an FAQ, frequently asked questions, is an indicator that there is something wrong with the software and that the user model does not fit the software model. You may laugh, but an FAQ is more and more in the even in the commercial companies. The second one are metaphors. Even metaphors are not limited to graphical user interface applications. I choose a picture from a pipe organ. A pipe organ is a very old synthesizer, and there isn't a real trumpet in the pipe organ, but they called it the sound, they called it a trumpet. Metaphors should make the software to use intuitive. Metaphors depend on the audience. Certain audience know certain words. Metaphors hide the underlying system, so the user has not to struggle with technical details about the software systems. And using misleading metaphors, unfortunately, is worse than none. There's sometimes some discussion about the GIMP, the picture editing software, because they use metaphors which are not often understood very well. Accessibility. We all know we have citizens with physical or cognitive limitations like blindness. Command line options in GUI programs are helpful. Then there are citizens with movement limitations. They cannot use a mouse. They have problems pointing the mouse on a button on the screen. because they have movement limitations. Then software gets used all over the world, so it is important to translate this software. In many countries, there are people who do not speak English at all. And we have to respect cultural and political aspects, so it's sometimes a problem to use flags or on an icon. A dollar coin on an icon can be problematic, or parts of humans. As soon as I have a hand on an icon, most probably it will be a Western hand, and as soon as the software gets used in Central Africa, it's a problem. So you may laugh, but that's a problem. A very important topic is consistency. First of all, an application needs to be consistent with previous versions of the same application, with file formats. We all know that a new version of an application and the file format has changed, so we need to write a converter to convert the old files, and sometimes there is no converter. Then consistency with the window manager used and other applications. The user sits on the computer, he knows one application, and he will for sure try to port knowledge he has about one application to port to another application. So it is very useful if an application behaves as the other applications. So there should be support for common command line options like minus minus help, minus minus version, and so on. Then it is very useful if graphical user interface programs are able to start without any command line options given. So the user can have a desktop icon and click on it, and it will really start instead of simply not starting because in the icon there's a command line option missing. Then desktop help system integration. There should be at least one single help page. Even if it's clearly pointing there is no help, that is very useful instead of that's there's no help at all. Then desktop menu entries and file type registration is also an important thing. I'll have some examples later. Feedback. Feedback is for keeping the user informed. You can here see a level indicator. So the user sees that there is work in progress, or there is input, or there is currently data. Feedback should provide simple but clear information, and it should enable the user to solve a problem. If there is a problem and a dialog box appears, the text should be short but clear and simple and enable the user to solve the problem and to avoid it in the future. Straightforwardness. It is important to know that the user who sits in front of the computer and uses an application can only spend a reduced amount of attention to the software. He has a guitar lick in mind, he has a drum pattern in mind, the telephone will ring, a colleague will ask a question, and so on. So the user cannot spend all attention to the computer. So the software should remember things for the user, like commands, settings, connections, and so on. Reducing the need to read documentation. Users dislike reading documentation, it's a fact. And project members dislike writing documentation. And so, according to Dale Phillips, who asked for documentation, a further idea is to reduce the amount of documentation needed. So it will make users' life easier as well as developers' life. A tidy UI matching the workflow. Think about analog synthesizers where I have the oscillators and the signal flows through the machine, and I have the controls on top of the machine, and I can clearly see the signal flow from the oscillators through the mixer to the filter, to the amplifier, and to the effects section, and to the output. Or aligning buttons and so on. Disabling interface elements when senseless. If there is an action on the computer and a menu command doesn't make any sense, I can disable it so it appears as gray letters only. Then reasonable pre-configuration for an immediate start, so a user gets a good start, he starts an application, it's well pre-configured, so he can immediately start to use the application. And human numbering, human beings tend to start counting at one. They do not start counting at zero. But sometimes I see software where zero is the starting point for numbering any things. So that's a minor issue, but it's still interesting sometimes. User control. Humans want to control their environment, every one of us. Everyone wants to control the environment instead of the controlling the environment, the user. So it should be able to cancel long-lasting operations. The user wants to configure the system, like working directories, which auto subsystem he likes to use. Perhaps he wants to rename and reorder sound cards and MIDI ports. And as soon as he remembers the software and the user model, as soon as the software model fits the user model and you fit the user's expectations, he will feel like he's controlling the environment. That's not true. We control the user, of course, but he will feel as he controls the software. Well, indicators for debugging the setup. When something goes wrong, I get no MIDI input. I need indicators. Is there MIDI input or not? And reducing the amount of decisions to be made. Users dislike making decisions, so the amount of dialogues coming on the screen where the user has to press on OK or cancel should be reduced. Direct access means that the user has easy access to commands. Then dynamic instead of static options. Some applications have command line options. You started with the command line option, but during the runtime, you cannot change this option. You have to restart the application and then to reload your patch and redo all connections. Documentation on demand. We know users dislike reading documentation, but tooltips and that's help is a really useful thing. And if they are available, they need to contain reasonable entries, because otherwise the user will think that these controls are even useless in or senseless in other applications. Then controls for invoking external applications I've seen. I'll have an example later on. An application can offer and build in access to MIDI and audio connections. And maybe it will be possible to have configurable card mixer front ends. Because currently, if you plug in a USB sound card and you open up a mixer application, you will have controls and you will not understand the controls. So perhaps it would be possible to have configurable mixer front end someday. And nine, a short topic, forgiveness. The classical undo and redo steps. I even have a hardware synthesizer with undo and redo. And snapshots, we know mixer automation where you can take snapshots at certain points so you can easily set the system back to a certain state. Okay, this has been merely a user point of view. So the developer's point of view. The problem is working on usability needs time and resources are limited, especially in the free software world. That's a problem. Then if I write an application or a small script and I put it on my homepage, and I think I wrote it for my own need, if it's useful for someone else, he can take it. No one can urge me to include any usability thing in my script or my little application. But as soon as the project grows and I have a tracker system on SourceForge and so on, usually the interest in usability grows because it can reduce the amount of always the same user questions and so on. Sometimes it's difficult because if you made a design decision at the beginning of a project, it's difficult to change it later on. So sometimes it would be very useful if at the beginning of a project, even some usability ideas can be respected. Because later introduction can be difficult, and if I change the system afterwards, I will have consecutive bugs and I have to fix the bugs again. Then, most often, technical interest versus UI design, and UI experts are missing, of course. We are merely interested in algorithms and interesting stuff, but we are not interested in sitting in front of the UI and aligning objects and so on. Then, existing users beg for bug fixing and for new features. They do not beg for usability ideas because they already know how to use an application. but working on usability will enable new users to join the project. So if you want to work on usability, you need to make a clear decision. I want for the next release to invest some time on usability issues. So usability is nothing which happens accidentally or something like this. Okay, that have been the 9 points. I have now some examples I'd like to show. If your application appears on the screen, the examples are not an offense. The examples are examples to concretize the ideas. Metaphors. We can talk hours about metaphors. We have not the time to talk hours about metaphors, so I have simply chosen one example. This is Patchage. It's a tool to connect check clients together, and I found it very intuitive, even better than the existing controls like Qt Check Connect or Qt Check Control. Every check client appears, and you can connect them like in AMS simply by drawing a line. If it could also make MIDI connections, ALSA sequencer MIDI connections, it would be a cool thing. And if it even contained a LATSPA or DISI host, it would be really a cool thing to control the complete Linux box as an environment. Second one, accessibility, a thing myself, I cannot write code, but I contribute by writing documentation and so on. If you want users to give you something back, it is useful if you have translation files in your source wall, which already are included in the make file, because users like me, okay, I can do so, but normal user cannot edit a make file and enter it in it. But if you deliver your software with the prepared translation files, it will happen that you get a user interface translation, maybe in, I do not know, in Spanish language or Japanese language or something like this. Of course, this needs that the application is prepared to be translated. Consistency, documentation on demand. If you have tooltips and that's this help, then it should include reasonable entries. If the tooltips and the what's this help include the same text as the checkbox itself, these aren't very useful, because if the user doesn't understand the checkbox and he clicks on the tooltips or the what's this help and it contains the same entries, it's no help. Menu entries on the desktop system, users tend to start on a desktop system by the menu, the applications. So it's useful if you include a menu entry there. Okay, you can tell it's the packager's job to do so. The same for help entries, to include at least one help page clearly stating there is no help, or pointing to the web homepage of the project, or pointing to a configuration file that's with comments, or pointing to README files, very useful. Then file type registration, I have chosen here an example. Muse saves its files on the computer as MAD files, but it doesn't register the file type. So if the user clicks on the file, users are used to click on files to start the applications with the file, then simply a text editor or an XML editor opens, so the user will be confused. Understanding common command line options, I told before, like --help, --versions, but even a graphical user interface synthesizer can take a file to open on the command line. So even blind users will be able to start the synthesizer with a patch file, make the MIDI connections, and use the synthesizer in conjunction with an external keyboard. Trying to unify command line options, I have a short example here. I have iolus minus uppercase J to start it in check mode. AMS takes an option --check, and mPlayer takes an option mPlayer --AO check. So the user cannot port knowledge about one application to another application. Each time he wants to start a check application, he has to look into the help file or the man page again to know which option this program understands. Then there's feedback. At first, clearly stating problems, if a problem occurred. So it would be helpful if there is a dialogue on the screen. We have a Muse dialogue here, clearly stating, OK, there is no check. Server has been found. Check this. Check was started. And if it was started as the same user, this is very helpful. The user now recognizes, OK, I have a problem with check. Even if he does not know what check is, he has a good starting point. He can now Google for check, and maybe he will learn what went wrong. Oh, an application should not freeze in unexpected circumstances. I often saw applications, as soon as the device is blocked, the application simply will freeze. You can click on it, there are no menu entries available, there are no buttons available, you even cannot close the application. That's a behavior, if we can avoid it, it would really be cool. Then start even if check is not available. I'm no tech expert, but why can an application not start even if check is not running? And I can start check afterwards, and then the application will recognize, oh, check is now available, I can now work. I told before displaying a message if the audio device is blocked. I have an example here. I play an MP3 file or an ARC file using XMMS directly on the ELSE device, and then I start AMS, and unfortunately AMS does not appear on the screen, but it doesn't quit, and it does not give me an error message. And I wonder, why did AMS not start? So I do not care. And 3 hours later, I stop XMMS, and suddenly AMS will appear on the screen. This may confuse the user, I guess. And as soon as he has started AMS for the first time, he will certainly try it a second time and a third time. And 3 hours later, AMS appears on the screen, and he closes AMS, and again, an AMS will appear on the screen. That's really funny. And displaying work in progress, so the user, if I save a big file or something like this that I have in progress bar, so the user knows, well, okay, there's work in progress, and he has not to guess, has the file now been saved, or have I to wait some further seconds? Straightforwardness, pre-configuration, loading default documents. As Hydrogen appeared, you know Hydrogen, I think, the drum machine from Comic. That's a great tool. I was really amazed. As soon as you start it for the very first time, it loads a default example patch. You can simply press on play, and it will play a drum pattern. It's really cool. Furthermore, it has more demo files, and it has a menu entry in the file menu, open demo. It simply jumps to the correct directory, and you can see the example files and open them and listen to them. Or it even has an option, it can open the last used file at startup. Even Muse does so, as far as I remember. You start it and it knows the last file used, and it will open it again. Hydrogen even remembers the audio system it used. It has an option in the preferences. I want to be started as a check client, and it even remembers the ports it has been connected to. So the user can start Hydrogen, and he is not in need to at first open QCheck Connect or something like this. Or various output plugins. We all know we have a heterogeneous system on Linux. So an application which want to be straightforward can have various output plugins. An example is XMMS again. XMMS has really huge stack of output plugins. You can use it on top on a check server, on an ArtsD, on an eSound, and so on. And it would be helpful, there's also applications which do so, if an application that starts can auto-detect which audio subsystem is available. Is an ARTS running, is an eSound running, is an ELSE device available, is a check server running, or is only OSS available. Human numbering, I told it before, human beings tend to start counting at 1 instead of 0. Then for user control, This is a screenshot from Rose Garden, the sequencer. In front of the track, there's a small bar. As soon as I play on my keyboard and MIDI events come in, I will see that there are MIDI events. So if I cannot record MIDI, I clearly see, okay, there's MIDI input. The problem is somewhere between the input and the track. Avoiding urging the user to make decisions. This is a screenshot of SysExer, a small tool to send and receive SysEx data. You can receive SysEx, and it counts the packages. That's just nice. But the user has to know as soon the SysEx transfer has been completed, and then click on OK. Then SysExer will ask, oh, there are multiple SysEx packages in it. Do you want to save them as one single file or in multiple files? You press on one single file, and then it asks you where to save the file and which name. So the user has to make three consecutive decisions in a short period of time. Perhaps we can do something here at this point. Then direct access. Polyphony in AMS only via command line switch. I told it before. You start AMS, you do all connections, you load a patch, and after that, oh, I forgot to set the polyphony, so it's monophonic, and you want to change it, you have to quit AMS and to restart it again with the correct command line parameter. And then you have to reload your patch, you have to redo all connections and so on. This simply needs time. It's cost time. Then preference changes requiring restart. Oh, it's written wrong. ISO applications, as soon as you do preference changes, the application tells you, I want to be restarted now. Years ago, I switched to Linux, and I was told life is too short for reboots, but OK. Configurable external helper applications. I've seen a nice thing in Rose Garden again. You can, in the preferences, enter which audio editor you like to use. You can put an Audacity in it or something else. And as soon as you click on an audio track, the external editor gets opened with a file. That's really cool. You have direct access to the file directly from the user interface from the sequencer. Configurable card front ends. This is a notebook. It has a cheap AC97 onboard chip, and these chips can have lots of controls, and AMS, not AMS, also detects the chip. And if I watch into the mixer of my notebook, I have a huge amount of controls, but the notebook has only one headphone output, one line input, and one microphone input. So I wonder why are there this huge amount of mixer controls in my mixer. Perhaps we can have a configuration file for ELSA to tell the mixer front end which controls are available on the machine or not. So we can have more information for mixes. So, summary. I think Linux is surely ready for the audio desktop. We have all those applications. They have interesting applications. Usability can bring free audio software to more users. And I find it useful if users who tend to use free software because they feel free and they want to have freedom and they want to use free software, but they need our support concerning usability. Then if we have more users, we can have more project members. Usability is not only limited to graphical user interface design. Then we have a heterogeneous system, so it's a special challenge. It does not mean that it is not possible to work on usability issues, but it's a special challenge, of course. Then working on usability needs time and resources, as always, unfortunately. And working on usability needs a clear decision. This means if you want to work on usability issues on your application, you clearly need to state this at a certain point to include usability thoughts in the next release. Okay, that's it. Thanks for your patience. Any questions so far?
Any questions or comments? Anybody?
I'm Stefan Kersten from Germany. Do you have any thoughts, or did you find anything about software usability with regard to supporting multiple platforms? I mean, if you have user interface guidelines for Macintosh, for Windows, for GNOME.
Yes, this has been quite interesting. Slowly, if you go back to the second slide, it will take some time. Then I was amazed because these papers, here we have the papers, these papers are not limited to a certain platform. It's a kind of abstract. So they tell about the principles, and the principles are not only valid for one particular platform. Of course, the Mac OS 8 human interface guidelines have originally been written.
Wait a second, Stefan.
If you're supporting one platform, you adhere to certain principles with regard to, I don't know, menu entry names, keyboard shortcuts and stuff. How can you make an application usable on maybe three platforms?
Okay, you will never manage to do it. You will never manage to make a Windows application a pure Windows application, so it behaves as all other Windows applications, and to make it a cross-platform application, which is also available on the Macintosh, and it behaves like a Macintosh application. This is a challenge. I do not think that it is possible, because the Macintosh behaves different in minor things, but there are things which are different. So you will never manage to make a Windows application to 100% real in Windows application, and evenly make it a cross-platform application which runs on a Macintosh and is a 100% Macintosh application. You're right, this is not possible to do it in 100%.
Some questions from the internet?
Yeah, two questions from IRC. Arnold Krille wants to present you with a little flame bait. He asks, what's better, sliders or knobs? He wants to know, what is better, sliders or knobs?
The knobs have a problem that usually, if you need to move the mouse in a circular way, it's not nice with the mouse, but we can have knobs and you can move the mouse up and down to move the knob. So it depends, I think. Knobs have the advantage they save space on the screen, and sometimes it leads to a cleaner user interface if you use knobs instead of sliders. But it depends on the situation, I think.
Thanks. And one more question from Stephen Nixon of the LifeWise project. He asks, how do you think developers can be helped into seeing usability as a priority and how to test for it? And he asks, how about an annual usability award?
Okay, that's a good question. Why should a developer or why should project members do usability? Okay, we can introduce an award, but on the other hand, if you make a decision and you work on usability, it's useful because the amount of questions asked in the mailing list will be reduced, and so it saves you time. That may be also a thing which is important. But of course, we can introduce an award. Why not?
Maybe a comment on this. It could be a nice idea to ask, for instance, the German Linux magazine, who is giving out a Linux software award each year. I think other magazines do as well, like the Linux Journal, and ask them if they can have a new category to give to applications with the best usability practices brought in.
Yeah, that could be a really good idea. Thanks for the idea.
That was Frank Neumann. another question, comment? Nobody? Okay, so then thank you very much, Christoph, for this very interesting talk. And now we're having lunch break for 1 hour, and we are continuing with Mareje Bahlmann, 1:30. Thank you.